3. Gary, Jeff, and Tyler materialized. Because the couch upon which they had been sitting did not materialize with them, they immediately fell to the ground. Because they had not expected to teleport, they wallowed around on the ground in confusion. Because they had been sitting next to each other on a couch, their confused wallowing resulted in a tangle of arms and legs, and a great deal of alarmed cursing. Philip materialized at the exact same moment as his three friends, but he had been standing before the teleportation, so he was in a better position to handle the surprise with dignity. He could tell that they were standing on stone, and that it was darker and colder than the night had been back home in Ledchurch. Philip pulled his open wizard robe shut, looked down at Gary, and asked, "What is this?" Gary's love of practical jokes was legendary. Not his skill in executing them, just his love of them. Before discovering magic, his idea of a great joke was placing a flaming bag of dog poop on someone's doorstep. After discovering magic, he graduated to transporting the flaming bag of dog poop into the house. Thus, whenever something happened that was simultaneously inexplicable and not at all funny, all eyes turned to him. Gary said, "I don't know. No idea." He, Tyler, and Jeff had got their bearings and pulled themselves to their feet.
"Seriously?"
Philip persisted.
"What is this?"
Gary said, "I'm telling you, Philip, I didn't do this."
"And I'm supposed to believe that?"
Philip asked.
"Did we land in anything nasty?"
Gary countered.
"No. Looks like we didn't. Does that sound like my style?"
Philip had to admit it didn't.
"Then who did? Any of you know?"
Tyler, in a low, angry tone, said,
"Let's ask him."
He pointed to the ground behind Philip. Philip turned and saw Jimmy, the one wizard who was trusted even less than Gary. Of course, Gary's greatest offense was pulling pranks on all of them. Jimmy had attempted to kill all of them, was exiled to the future, and after 30 years fought and lied and tricked his way back. Now he was here, lying on the ground, wearing dark blue pajamas and holding a paperback copy of Getting Things Done.
"What is this?"
Philip bellowed. Tyler, Jeff, and Gary moved to stand beside Philip, and they all looked down at Jimmy, a unified front of accusation. Jimmy sat up, coughing and gasping for air. He put the hand holding the book down to support himself and held up one finger of the other hand in an attempt to stave off their questions until he'd caught his breath. Tyler growled,
"Start explaining, Jimmy, and it better be good."
Jimmy waved his free hand and croaked,
"My bed, it's like 3 feet high. When I materialized, I landed flat on my back. Knocked the wind out of me."
"Why'd you bring us here?"
Philip barked. Jimmy chuckled, looked at what he was wearing, and said,
"I wanted to show you all my pajamas. I'm really proud of them. Also, I was hoping you'd read my book to me. If you just do the part about managing multiple to-do lists, I think it really helped me go to sleep."
Jeff said,
"That's enough with the smart remarks."
Jimmy stood up, examining his clothes and his new surroundings. His white hair was a mess. He was still off balance, but he moved with a speed that was impressive for a man who is physically in his 60s. He said,
"I'm sorry, but I don't have anything else to offer you. Come on, guys. You can't honestly believe that I did this. Think about it. I'm still on permanent probation. You've only given me a few powers, and you're monitoring me at all times. Even if I did want to harm any of you, which I don't, it'd be pointless. I might as well just exile myself."
The other wizards muttered grudging agreement, which was the closest thing to approval Jimmy got these days. The five of them stood in confused, angry silence, peering into the darkness around them. As their eyes adjusted, they could see that the granite knob on which they stood was in fact the peak of a massive monolithic rock somewhere high in the mountains. The silhouetted horizon looked like the teeth of a poorly made saw. Three sides of their rock fell away sharply, to a fall that meant certain death. The fourth side narrowed into a precarious bridge, leading to the dense pine woods that clung to the side of a large mountain. After several seconds, the howling of the wind was drowned out by a mind-bendingly loud voice, which shouted,
"Silence!"
The men covered their ears and fell to their knees. It had been so loud that even its echo was deafening. As the word reverberated over and over, Gary whimpered,
"We were silent."
The voice repeated,
"I said silence!"
The sound was so intense, the wizards actually felt it hit them, as if the sound had mass and weight. Again, the voice echoed in what was clearly the vast open space that surrounded them. As the sound died in the distance, Philip moaned,
"You saying silence is literally the loudest thing I've ever heard."
A light appeared in front of the wizards. It flickered and nearly disappeared. Then it grew stronger. As their eyes adjusted, they could see that it was a flame, surrounded by a lantern, held by an old man with wild hair, eyes that were milky and white, and teeth that were not. His clothes looked well-worn, but not well-cleaned.
"Soon it will be dawn," the old man said, "and your quest will begin."
Jimmy removed his hands from his ears and asked,
"I'm sorry, what did you say?"
"I," the old man replied, "you're going on a quest full of danger and peril and risk of life and limb."
Jeff said, "All that, huh?" Gary shook his head.
"Yeah, no thanks."
Years of being nearly invulnerable had given the wizards a certain disrespect for threats that came from anyone but another wizard.
"First," the old man continued, "you'll brave the dangers of Kaatu Pass. If you survive, you'll make your way to the cursed mines of Mortlach. There you will seek out Blandoch, head of the mining guild."
Tyler said, "No, pretty sure we won't."
"The miners will give you a sample of a mystical ore called Diluine. You will take this splendid rock many miles to the town of Bowmore, where it will be used to craft a weapon fit for use in the final battle."
"That's it?" Jeff asked. "That's the quest? That's like three things."
"Take a moment to prepare, adventurers, and be warned. On your journey, you will face death 1,000 different ways,"
the old man continued, oblivious.
"Three different ways," Gary corrected.
"If that," Tyler added. "I mean, go to a mine, get a rock, and carry it to a town. None of that sounds dangerous."
"It does sound like a lot of work, though,"
Philip said. He turned back to the old man.
"I'm sorry. We're going to pass. Thank you."
The old man was giving them a shrewd, appraising look, which dragged on a bit longer than necessary. Finally, he said,
"I can see you are men of valor. Which of you shall lead his fellows on this quest?"
Jimmy said,
"None of us, because we aren't doing it. I mean, I'm sorry, guys, I don't speak for everyone, but that's the impression I get. We definitely aren't doing it, right?"
The other men nodded, then waited to see how the old man would react to this. He continued looking over the group, as if judging their mettle. After a long moment, he said,
"I can see you are men of valor. Which of you shall lead his fellows on this quest?" "We said we aren't doing it,"
Philip replied. He turned to the others and said,
"Okay, now that that's out of the way, let's see about going home."
Jimmy said, "Well, that's going to be hard since we got transported here without our staffs or our hats."
It was true. Philip, Tyler, Gary, and Jeff had been enjoying a relaxed evening and had removed their hats and laid down their staves and Jeff's wand. Jimmy had clearly called it an evening early and had settled in for bed when he'd been pulled away. As far as Jimmy could tell, everything he had said was accurate. He couldn't figure out why the other men looked so pleased. Jimmy asked,
"What? What's funny?"
Jeff said,
"You're the only one who needs to have the hat and staff on them to do magic anymore. We fixed that little weakness a little while after you got the drop on us."
"Well, why didn't you include me?"
Jimmy asked.
"Because you might try to get the drop on us again,"
Philip replied. Jimmy was chagrined, but it didn't last long, as their conversation was interrupted by the old man, who said,
"I can see you are men of valor. Which of you shall lead his fellows on this quest?"
The wizard slowly turned to look at him. He was standing in the same spot. His arms were in the same position. The arm holding the lantern up showed no sign of fatigue. He just stood there, head moving slightly, as if he were studying the wizards, who had not changed one bit since he had started studying them several minutes earlier. Tyler said,
"I'm pretty sure he's not real."
Jeff said,
"Yeah, he's computer-generated. They did some pretty sophisticated bump mapping, but even in this light, you can see the polygons if you look hard enough."
"He's like he's caught in a loop,"
Philip muttered.
"Yeah," Jimmy agreed. "I think he's waiting for a response, something he'll recognize."
A rock, only slightly smaller than a softball, arced heavily through the air and bounced off the old man's head. The rock fell to the ground with a dull thud, but the old man remained motionless, as if he'd been hit with a ping-pong ball. The wizards all turned to Gary, who was massaging his throwing arm. He said,
"I wanted to see if he'd recognize that as a response."
Philip said,
"Fair enough. All right, fellows, let's say we get out of here. Put a hand in, everyone."
Philip put his hand forward. Tyler, Jeff, and Gary placed their hands on Philip's, making physical contact so that his spell would transport them as well. They looked at Jimmy, as if irritated that he was making them wait. Jimmy placed his hand on the pile. Philip and Tyler looked at him as if irritated that they were having to touch him. Philip said,
"Prenu min hejme,"
which made him smile, not only because it was the spell that would get them out of there, but because it was Esperanto for "take me home," and was, as such, a Phil Collins reference. Philip's smile faded when they went nowhere. He tried his spell again. Then the other wizards tried theirs. Attempts were made to fly and to create food or gold from thin air. Nothing worked. They were without their powers. Suddenly, the sheer cliffs that surrounded them looked more menacing. The narrow bridge leading to relative safety more precarious. And the artificial old man standing silently studying them much more sinister.
"I can see you are men of valor,"
the old man said.
"Which of you shall lead his fellows on this quest?"
Gary looked to Philip and asked,
"What should we do?"
The wizards all looked to Philip, who thought for a moment, then said,
"Well, we have two choices. We can be proactive, give him the input he wants, and see where this leads. Or we can be passive. We don't do anything that he might construe as input. We just wait here and see what happens. Maybe in the meantime we'll think of something. You all know me. I think you'll all know which way I'm leaning."
The wizard sat down and settled in to do some serious waiting.